Welcome. This is Unfolding, the show where I unfold creative business minds. My name is Marco Pfann, and now I just want you to sit back and enjoy the show. So today we are back and we are talking to Ekaterina Solomina, and she is the founder of Future London Academy. Ekaterina, tell me, what is the Future London Academy all about?
Well, thanks, first of all, for having me on this podcast. I was really excited to talk to you because lots of your guests are very good friend of mine, hero of mine, and just wonderful people. So I'm glad to be in this mix and glad to tell you more about what we're all about. And Futureland Academy is an executive school for creatives, which means we do a variety of courses, events, and programs for senior creatives. Basically, when you get to senior level as a creative director, executive creative director, or founder of your own agency, what do you need to know at that level? And kind of goals different places.
So what do you need to know? What do you need to know when you come from this production mindset to the executive level of a creative company?
Very good question. I suppose the best examples and kind of learnings maybe I can share from one of the programs we run, which is our Design Leaders program, the most famous program we have, where you're basically taught by the founders of Wolf Olin's Pentagram and all of the coolest. And it's very interesting. The reason why we created this program is basically because of this question, because not everyone actually knows what do you need to know at that level. It's not really obvious. You kind of feel like there is something lacking, maybe some business knowledge. You kind of sense that maybe MBA can help to grow your company or to grow your position within the company. But then kind of after that statement, usually people get lost. And I'm exactly the same. I was used to be a creative director and worked in a variety of agencies. And I know that feeling when you feel like you need to know something else, something new, something that you don't know, but you can't really say or pinpoint what is the range of skills is. And we approach it from a very holistic way, because I suppose there are things that you need to know or have to know, and that falls kind of those categories are business and finance and operations and other things as creatives maybe you haven't been exposed to in a more kind of structured way. And there are also skills that are great to know, like leadership and understanding who you are and the psychology. And they are incredibly needed in the industry. But then there are things that we believe you should know, which is something that doesn't come up in traditional MBAs and actually rare comes up in conversations in general, which is why do we even run creative agencies or create products? How does it affect the planet from ethical, sustainable point of view, from cultural point of view? What do we understand about the world that we live in, the geopolitics, the other difficult subjects? And at the end of the day, how can we as creatives, as founders, as business owners, do something good and make this world a little bit better with what we actually love doing?
So that's also about taking responsibility, right? It's like for the work you do with the client you work together. I like that. So why? And I know my audience, because I'm part of the audience. Why would I want to learn about business, about leadership, about taking responsibility? Like why? What's in for me?
Oh, no. It's a great question. And we actually have people coming through this journey and we hear kind of similar struggles that people go through at a certain point when, again, they maybe grew the agency to maybe size of 50 or 100 people. And they're trying to figure out what does it take to make it a bigger agency, whether it is in people, like 500,000 people agency, whether it is in revenue that you just want to double or 10x your revenue, what do you need to know to get to this next level? So that's kind of question number one, why people come and kind of why they should learn about the business. Other people come because they want, obviously, the career progression and they want to understand how does this CFO thing and therefore how can we convince them that there needs to be a bigger budget. And the truth is, what I learned from all these incredible people who teach in the program on Ohio, who I had a privilege to work with in my career, that design is very linked to business. And designers like not to touch the business side and the numbers. And it's usually the, I wouldn't say scary, but not so interesting part that a lot of designers try to avoid. While actually, if you learn more about pricing, business strategy, sales, all these things will make you a better designer because you will understand how your clients, your customers actually think of what they're trying to get mm-hmm. out of your rebrand, packaging, whatever there is. And if you cannot link what you do as a creative, as a designer, whether it is a new rebrand or whether it is the new wonderful, beautiful, the most amazing packaging in the world, if you cannot link it to why does it matter for the business, for the customer, or for anyone else, and how you can quantify that, your job will be much harder. And also you can potentially go a wrong direction.
It's tough. And I've been in a situation like decades ago when all of a sudden someone like you sit in front of a big CEO or the chairman of some sort, and they ask you why you, or they ask you how do we benefit from them, and you just draw a blank. Like, I didn't know anything. I didn't know what to say. I was like, and then you actually lose the job. And in my case, we didn't lose the job, but we got from $1 million budget to $500,000 budget because I didn't know the answer. Right? Just like, why? Why shall we do that? What's the commercial benefit of that? And I love what you do and what you just said. It's like understanding the bigger picture here. It's like, it's clients don't, especially the big companies, they don't just buy an asset, a piece of art. They want to do something with that. They want to have something. So I love that. Yeah, that's, and I would love for the more creatives to understand that, yes.
And you are so right. You can miss out on big opportunities if you just don't have the language that the other side will understand. Yes. And I've been on both sides. I worked in creative agencies. I worked for some of the coolest companies in the world, and I worked for brands. And now I run my own company that has a wonderful design team that kind of has to worry about both of creating incredible design, and Future London Academy is known for its brand. So we care a lot about how we look, how we feel, what we represent. But also at the end of the day, we're running a company. So therefore, we need to understand how all of these beautiful things that we design link to actually what we are trying to do, whether we are trying to build better experiences, better product, grow as a company, grow as a team, whatever that is. How does this connect to everyday jobs that we do? And it's not an easy question. And I can give you examples, I suppose, from the industry of what really gave me this spark of inspiration of how we as creatives can think completely differently about even how we price our services by understanding the business. Would it be, do you want to hear an example?
Yeah, please, yes.
Well, that example actually came from when we learned about pricing. And pricing is a difficult subject. It's a touchy subject. It's an emotional subject. There are so many things that link to pricing. And we have wonderful VP of sales talking about pricing. And she was saying, like, obviously, you can do cost-based pricing. You can do time-based pricing, all sorts of things. And creative agencies are known for doing very much cost-based pricing. Like, this is the amount of hours we spend on this. This is how long it will take us to build. We need a team of 10 people. Let's do a markup of whatever, 50%. Okay, this is our budget for this project. Therefore, dear client, this is what we charge for this. Would you like to buy this packaging or new packaging project, let's say? Which is interesting and wonderful proposition. But if you flip it on the other side and understand why, what you said earlier, why does someone come to you to do a new packaging? What might be on their mind at that point? How did this project even appear in the company? You probably will get to some sort of point where you understand, okay, maybe let's say this tea brand was kind of currently has X amount of sales because they have X amount of customers that drink tea, and among all the other tea brands, they let's say have quarter of the market. Let's say they're a very, very popular brand that currently has quarter of the market. So quarter of all customers who drink tea drink this particular tea, which is fantastic. But can we make it half of a market? Can we create such a beautiful or maybe such a interesting packaging? Maybe beauty is not what our customers care about. Maybe it's something else. Can we change our packaging in such a way that from quarter of the market, we get to half of the market? So our tea will become the most popular tea on the market. Now, what do you need to do to understand that? First of all, you need to understand the market. And this is where the terms start coming. So TAM, SAM, I'm sure a lot of your listeners know all these terms. So total addressable market. So that's where the business school starts.
Probably not.
Total addressable market basically is the amount of potential customers. Let's say people who drink tea in the market that you sell, let's say UK. So how many people drink tea in the UK? And you can actually Google this data. Like you can find rough idea. Or like if you produce something for babies, how many babies of that age are in the UK? So there is a kind of a rough number. It doesn't need to be super accurate, but this is called total addressable market. So okay, that's how many potentially people, if every single person buys something, that's how much money you can generate. Now, obviously, not going to happen that every person who potentially can buy tea will buy tea. So then you can start kind of dividing into the segments and everything else. But first, you need to understand the TAM, I would say the number one number that you should be aware of as a creative, as a designer working with a product. So if you work with this tea company, try to understand like what is their market share right now? Ask them, what's your market share? What is it 1% of this 1 million people that drink tea? Like what kind of situation are we dealing with? And then what would be your ideal outcome? Okay, we rebrand this, we create new beautiful packaging. What are you trying to do? And that will give you a really great, first of all, strategy for your product, because then you can go about and it's slightly different when you try to grow like 10x a product. So that maybe needs a radical redesign, something completely different. So maybe even losing your customer base that you have right now because you can't grow within this customer base. Or maybe it's like an incremental. We don't want to lose this customer base. We want to increase it a little bit. And these are the types of customers we want to get who drink this, I don't know, this other tea. So suddenly from just abstract project about beautiful design, you get to very good numbers. Now we get back to pricing, because what happens if there are a million customers in the UK who drink, and for the sake of simplicity, it's a £1 tea. So it's a £1 tea, million customers can potentially buy. So it's £1 million is somehow floating in the market. So if currently you have only, let's say, half of the market, so you have 500,000, by increasing it, or let's say it was quarter and you want to have, it was 250,000, now you want to have. So your design will generate your client 250,000. So if...
Okay, here's a question. I get that, but... And I get the strategic thinking behind that, and now you connect with the marketing department, all that. Creators, like in school, we don't learn, even though we have those insights now, we don't really learn how to use them. What do you, like, how can, like, I want to increase the market by 0.0 whatever. Like, what's the insight here? Is that something they learn at Future London Academy too?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, the thing is, designers actually have lots of answers. And to your question, how to increase a market share, you do research, you understand who are the customers. I mean, designers are great at doing research and empathy and understanding what customers care about. I don't think these are the skills that designers necessarily need to learn.
True.
And then you can understand who are the customers who are not buying the tea, or who are buying the competitor tea, and why they're buying that particular tea, and what attracts them, what are their values. Maybe it's health. Right. Maybe health needs to go in a packaging because what they care about, having no caffeine, whatever that is. There will be very, very clear pointers that you can use in your design that will get you this. And
you need to know
where to look.
That's perfect. I think you need to know where to look. This is one of the key aspects here. It's like, I mean, designers, I work with a lot of people that they just need to be pointed towards something, right? It's there. They, as you said, they might already know that, but they don't know how to talk about it. They don't know how to address it. Oftentimes, it's just, I don't know how to ask those questions. and what questions are important? What can I use? And then what I also love is like this shift. What I know you do as well as is at Future London Academy is also this leadership, right? It's like when I had a company, and leadership is different if you're 4 people, 12 people, and all of a sudden you're 30 people. That's how far I got, having 30 people. Leadership is important. All of a sudden, it's not just, hey, do this, do that. It's a real full-time job, right? What do you experience? How do you experience the shift from people that coming into your program and have no idea of leadership? And how do they get out? What's the transformation like?
I would say it's very personal, because we have coaches who work on the program. We have obviously incredible leaders who share how they lead. So you kind of get a bit of both. You get real examples from different leaders, and there is no one way to lead, that's for sure. And you definitely need to understand who you are as a person and what feels natural and organic to you. But also you need to have a toolkit, because if you always have to make kind of decisions, what's the right thing now? How should I show up right now as a leader? What is the right thing to do as a leader? And you just constantly think in every micro situation about that. That's just very exhausting. So if you have some sort of toolkit or understanding, or a bit more of a structural point of view, what leadership is and how in different scenarios you can be a different type of leader or show a different side of your leadership, then it will be just easier for you to be a good leader. And to be honest, it all comes down to being empathic and being really curious about what's going on around you. Mm-hmm. Michael Wolff, the founder of Wolff Orleans, who also teaches in the program, he constantly talks about curiosity as the muscle that we need to train as creatives. And he himself is a great example. He just turned 90 years old, and he's as curious as anyone can be. He's more curious than a child, and going anywhere with him is such a joy, because he will just start noticing things around him, like that the leaves are very interesting color, that the napkins in the restaurant have this interesting texture. Like, he's constantly in this curiosity and noticing mindset. And I would say that's the key to any good leadership, because when someone challenges you and, let's say, doesn't agree with what you're saying, it's very easy to become defensive, especially if you're in a position of power or if you're talking to a client. There is a lot on the table. But again, if you switch this curiosity mindset and try to actually understand why someone says something, why do they feel this way? Why could this be true? Even if it's directly addressed to you, and it might feel very, very direct and maybe uncomfortable for someone to hear that, especially if you worked on something for a long time or if you believe in something, still try to switch to this curiosity mindset and understand, okay, why might this be true and why this person would say this or will think this, and try to go from there. So curiosity and empathy would take you definitely a long way, but yeah, there are many, many things.
Well, like the what you just said, like don't constantly think about it, because this drains your energy, and you can't be curious if you're in your head all the time too. So I like the idea of leadership through curiosity and empathy, and then actually asking people why are you angry? Why did you do that, or why didn't you do that, or why did you say that? So I like this idea of actually going deeper. This is almost like a coaching thing, right? It's like asking, getting to the question, the real question behind, and then you can actually answer the right question. And a lot of times it's also what you said. I love the idea that you actually have to be careful when you have that power, right? Because you could just tell people what to do, but then they probably won't be happy and you probably won't get the results you're looking for. Yeah. So what do people struggle most with? Let's just say like real artists, real creatives, they come into this program and they have worked as creative directors for ages now. What's a shift? I mean, there are many shifts, right? There's this shift from art to commerce, kind of, then there's so many shifts, but what kind of shift is hardest to go through? What paradigm is hardest to let go?
I think change is hard in general for anyone. I don't think there is an easy way to change. It's easier when it's needed, when you believe in it, then when you know why you're doing it, then you're more likely to change. But still, we know we're creatures of habits. So whatever you are to this point, and again, we work with senior people with 15, 20 years of experience. So it's very difficult to step away from what you've been doing for all these years of experience. So I would say change is in general, the hardest thing, no matter which way you're changing. For a lot of people, it is personal transformation of who they are as a leader and understanding how they can be better, and kind of self-awareness around this and growth mindset, constantly developing kind of how you see the world and how you see your business. For a lot of people, it is revenue growth. So again, if you've been stuck at a certain revenue for a few years, there must be something that have been stopping you from growing further. So changing the paradigm won't be as easy as waking up tomorrow and just now I know. It still requires the work, it still requires reflection. And what is great about the program, I suppose, you do it throughout the year, so you don't need to like do it immediately. You have the whole year and the support of the coaches, the mentors, all the teachers that teach on the program, but also of your cohort that goes through the same thing. And I think that's probably the most powerful thing, especially as adults. I think we rarely have this support network in our adulthood that on one hand is on the same level. So no, they're not just same age, but they're also on the same level within their careers. So they understand the challenges that you have, but also they want to change. So they're going through this transformation together. They struggle together. They're vulnerable with you. And we have wonderful stories of people becoming best friends, starting companies together, collaborating on projects together, but also transforming together, whether it is growing the revenue and doubling, quadrupling your revenue throughout this journey. But you can also always have someone else that you can ask, like, have you done that? Like, have you tried this? And kind of compare the notes, which I think is very important when, especially when you're at a leadership position that can be very lonely.
It is lonely. It's so lonely. Like, you don't have, like, even if you have a partner, mostly, at least with my audience, you have another creative partner, right? And it's like, then how do you talk about business? Like, it's not working. And actually, that's why I have a job, because a lot of people want to talk to me because they don't have anyone else to talk. And so I think having something like a support system where you have other people going through the same changes, learning at the same pace. And then for you, it's a lot of like, also bigger agencies, right? It's like a corporate structure they are in. So I really think this support, this background, this support system is super valuable for creatives to, like, as you said, develop personal development, things like that. So a question that I'm really curious about is, who came up with the idea of Future London Academy? Was it your idea? Was it his idea?
So my co-founder, sorry, who?
Yeah, your co-founder.
Mo. So how did it happen? It has been 11 years ago. I think at that point we both worked. So myself and co-founder, we both worked together ages ago. And I suppose I always worked on the creative side. He always worked on the sales and business side. And we've constantly been talking about kind of different things that are on our minds. And at that point, what was on my mind that I knew that I want to learn, I want to be better, but I was kind of doing well. I won some awards, was a creative director doing well with great projects, great portfolio. So I was at that point that I don't know what exactly do I need to learn, but also I don't know who and where I can learn it from. Oh, so the idea was to create something where I could actually learn, but we didn't think it would be a business. I just wanted to do it for fun as a side project. But because we were hanging out with Mo talking about all these ideas, and he obviously is a very commercially minded person because that's basically what his job was at that point. He said, have you considered doing it a business? Because then you can actually put more time into this. You can have a team and it will be just a better experience for everyone. And at that point, we didn't obviously know they will grow to the point that it is right now. And it was just a fun thing that we personally wanted to do. And then it started growing. And yeah, seriously, looking back, I don't know how and why it happened.
So you didn't come up with a business plan. Let's do that. It's kind of you grew into this, and which is always a better way.
And I think that's very important for businesses to also start from the point of passion and curiosity and just wanting to do something, because there will be ups and downs in any business. And if revenue is the only thing that you measure, then it will be very hard. Because no matter how successful you are, there will be, the market will change, the clients will change, something will change. But if you do it purely because you really like it, then it will be much easier to go through all of these changes.
So let's say I'm a creative studio owner. What can I expect when I join Future London Academy? Like, what are the results that I'm hoping to gain out of it?
Oh, great question. We have a variety of courses. So again, it depends really why people come, and some people come to learn more about brand strategy, about leadership, about kind of several topics. If we talk about design leaders, because I suppose I'm most excited talking about that program, because it's something that was kind of my pain for a while to create something. I really wanted this to exist. So now seeing it third year, just growing and successes of people who go through that, that just gives me so much joy and satisfaction that it was the right thing to do. So in terms of why people come and what do they expect and what happens to them, we had, again, like stories from people. So the program is 1 year, so it's split into 5 modules across the year. So you come to London for 2 weeks, then you travel back wherever you are, and then you come back again for 2 weeks, and we have one module in San Francisco as well. So throughout this kind of year, you see transformation of people on multiple levels. So we have people who were just starting a company, they just quit their very luxury corporate job that was paying great salary, and they jumped into this new world of entrepreneurship, and they were ready to do great things, but they kind of wanted, again, a slightly smoother journey, not to learn everything from your own mistakes, and also clarify what actually is the future of the business, because I'm sure lots of founders can relate to that. When you start the business, you not necessarily actually have the clear idea of which way it will grow, even if it's a creative agency. You think you'll be doing this, and then it kind of morphs into something else. You kind of get new interesting clients, and it kind of changes your trajectory. So it's very interesting to see people going through this journey basically just at a higher speed. I suppose they could have done it in 20 years on their own, like getting mentorship and coaches and finding people to talk to, but suddenly you compress it into 1 year. So you have to like go through this process much faster of understanding what you want to bring to this world, what's your business model will be, how, what are your best clients, what is your brand, who are you in this process, what's your best team, how to create culture, all of these things, including how to raise money and again, like all the legal side of things. So suddenly you, throughout the year, you would come up with just a clearer picture of who you are as a business and what you want to bring to this world. So we had people kind of changing what their business is through this journey and creating something unexpected, unique, and what felt like them really felt like this is the right thing for me to do. It's not just a business because I wanted to have a business. This is my business. This is what I feel passionate about and something unique that only I can offer. We also have more, I suppose, traditional stories of people who came with existing businesses and wanted to either raise money or grow the revenue. And again, it's you kind of can learn these things from your own mistakes throughout the year. So it will just take, again, 10, 20 years. Or you can get someone like a founder of a 1,000-person company who already done all of that, learn all the mistakes, and you can hear how to actually do this in a smoother way.
You have amazing creative legends in your program that teach and train your students. How does it work? Is that one-on-one? How are they included? How do the students have access to those people?
Sure, it's a bit of both. And that's why we were very dedicated to making sure this program is actually in person rather than online, because there is something very special when people come to the room together and see each other and shake each other's hands.
Mm-hmm.
So we have over 100 different experts who teach in the program. And as I mentioned, they are founders, CEOs, CFOs, COOs of some of the coolest agencies, design-led businesses, companies like Zaha Hadid Architects, again, Wolf Orleans, WPP. So it's really great examples that doing something interesting in the industry right now. And they come for half a day and spend with a group sharing everything that they do and how they do it in a very detail. We put a lot of effort putting content together with them, actually like checking all the slides and kind of the structure to make sure it is actually practical and useful for people in the room, because compressing 25, 30 years of experience into half day is a tough challenge.
It is.
So you need to pick what is the right and practical things that you can share to the group that, again, is at a certain level and planning to do certain things. So yeah, you get access to those people literally in the room. And again, people follow up with coffees, people meet after. It's quite interesting, the relationships, how these relationships develop. But also we have one-on-one mentorship sessions in the last module. So that's when people, our cohort is preparing for their final project. So basically they need to prepare what they're planning to do, whether it is growth plan, expanding to new geography, and they present it in front of advisors. And in preparation for that, they get one-on-one mentorship from, again, some of the coolest chief creative officers, founders, CFOs, VPs of sales, so who can help them shape this business strategy or growth strategy or personal leadership challenge in the best possible way.
They have access, they can ask questions. That's amazing. That's great. Tough question. What's the future for Future London Academy? Where are you going to?
That's a great question. And I love that we have Future in our name, because Future changes all the time. And we don't know what the future will be. And what we can do as humans, as creatives, as founders, entrepreneurs, is be prepared for the change, have curiosity, have growth mindset, have resilience, and anticipate what could be potential futures that could happen. For us, obviously, we are growing, and it's incredible to see the people who go through the program, what they do after and what they achieve. So that will only keep growing. And the alumni network that is already created is just some powerhouse of people across the world who are doing incredible things. So seeing that is just very rewarding. And we're definitely not here for the short game. We're not going to exit. We're not going to sell the company. We are not kind of in that game of 5 years. So we're definitely here for hundreds and hundreds of years. We're inspired by Bauhaus, and we're very much true to that philosophy of building something for the future. So we'll be there for hundreds of years, and I'm sure things will change and develop. But we want to make sure we create more conscious leaders who also not just create successful businesses, which is important, but do something good for the world that we live in. Founders and creatives have an enormous power, because everything you see around you, everything you touch, was created by a creative, by a business, by someone who made those decisions. So the world we live in the future basically relies on creatives and founders.
I really love what you just said, like the term conscious leaders. And actually, if I may propose, you should rename your program to Conscious Leaders, because I really believe this is what the world really needs. Like people that are empathic, conscious about change, about the people they lead, but also the business side, the world. And that would be it's an amazing premise that you have there. Conscious leadership. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, that's what we genuinely believe in. And actually that's what people going through the program and seeing the businesses they start or how they change, even creative agencies, and how they try to make sure that this purpose is the core of everything they do And I believe that if we just have more of these people in the world, seriously, our world will be a better place. Like, it will benefit all of us. So it's good that we have more and more creatives now going through, like, becoming CEOs and becoming founders, because they will approach boring problems with more imaginative solutions rather than just purely financial ones.
Exactly. It's not all, like, business is not only boring stuff. Like, you can make it fun, and that's why we need the creative people to get into business. And as I recently had great Andreas Hirst from Red Bull on my podcast, and he made a great remark, is that because of AI, the creative people will be forced back into the C-level street, because we are the ones that use it. We can handle it. Like, we are the ones that naturally work with AI, right? And it's more close to us than to other people, because it's changes. You can create things like that. And he believes that, and I believe this too, is like, this is an amazing opportunity for creatives to get into this C-level experience and actually go there, because creatives need to be there. If we want to have a better world, we need creatives as leaders in the C-suite, and they actually need to work on business problems and not just the creative problems. I love that.
100%.
Ekaterina, one last question. What is a message that you want to leave the audience with?
It's a big one. Only one message.
Life-changing question. No, nothing. Just for today. Just something.
I would, I suppose, refer back to what we believe, which is, I don't know if you've seen our slogan, is never stop learning. But I would take it in the broader sense that we should, as humans in general, we should always be open-minded and keep learning about people around ourselves, about who we are as people, about the world that we live in, and just constantly be curious and keep that open mind and never stop learning. So if there is someone listening right now who feels like they are stuck or they frustrated, I would say thing number one is just to open your mind and start being curious about things around you, and great things will happen.
That's a beautiful message. Be curious, and beautiful things will happen. Thank you so much. It was lovely having you on the show today. And yeah, I hope we can do this again sometime.
Thank you, Marco. It was a pleasure. And definitely catch up soon.
Thanks.
Thanks for tuning in. My name is Marco Pfann, and I hope to see you all again on our next show, where we unfold creative business minds.